Hey, it's Heath Mulliken from the Double Dropkick Show, and congratulations to Jason Blackburn, the first winner of the SOS Custom Tees monthly giveaway. He also happens to be a patron of the Double Dropkick Show. You can enter the contest by going to the Facebook page of SOS Custom Tees and giving them a like. If you've already done so, congratulations, you're entered for a contest every single month this year, and at the end of the year, we're going to have a very special one-of-a-kind prize opportunity. So make sure you go on Facebook and like SOS Custom Tees. Now, today's episode is very special. It comes from Carrie's Corner, January 19th, 2017, from our patrons-only Facebook group. This is Mark Whitman answering some of our patrons' questions. And this is just to give you a glimpse inside some of the content you receive when you are a patron of the Double Dropkick Show, which you can go do by going to patreon.com/doubledropkick or go to doubledropkick.com, click on the Patreon button. For as little as $1 a month, you get exclusive content, some behind-the-scenes news about the Carolinas wrestling scenes, and insight from Mark Whitman that you won't get anywhere else. So let's get on. This is Carrie's Corner with Mark Whitman.
I put the post out, and I'll try to do it on Mondays. And then on that Monday when I put the post up, I'll try to let you know what day I'm coming live. And I'll answer any questions that you got. You can pretty much ask me anything. I'll tell you anything except my Social Security number, just about. So the first question that I had was about preparing a match, kind of what went into preparing a match. For those who are new, who may not know, I trained to be a professional wrestler, was a professional wrestler, and currently work not as a wrestler, but as a commentator for Three Count. And I do not discuss that in the behind the scenes stuff on the show a whole lot, because I still, regardless, as much as I will talk about other people's business, people might be smart to the business, but they're not always smart to my business and our business at Three Count. So you never hear me talk about that kind of stuff. But Heath and I do a lot of the behind the scenes work for Three Count, laying a lot of stuff out and whatnot. And that's as much as you're going to get out of that. But as far as preparing a match, it is, that varies as much as there are guys in the business, to be honest with you, Scott. I have seen Ricky Morton tell a guy when he'd come over and say, what do you want to do? We're going to do this and do this. What are we going to do here? And Ricky Morton stop him and say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go out there and you're going to kick my ass and I'm going to sell. And then I'm going to tag Robert Gibson. And then we're going to hit you with a double drop kick. And that's how Ricky Morton laid the match out. You're going to beat me up. I'm going to sell it. I have seen other guys who are going to have a 30-minute match, talk about it for 2 minutes. They find out what the finish was. That's, for me, I'm not a finish guy. I'm not good. I can take, if I know where you want to get, I can help somebody develop a finish, but I'm not I'm not great at coming up with a finish. But if you give me a finish, I can work a match backwards to the lockup and help lay the match out. I mean, would you kind of agree with that assessment of my abilities?
Yes.
I figured you would. It's a smart man. So for me, all I needed was a finish. And if you gave me the finish and I could talk to the guy, I know other guys that I've seen them, you know, talk about guys going to have a 30-minute match and they talk about it for 2 minutes in the dressing room. And I've seen other guys going to have a 10-minute match and talk about it for 2 hours before the show. And not just talk about it. They have to go through all the moves in the dressing room and go into a ring.
And be sweating a lot.
And be sweating and breathing heavy before their match even starts. Savage and Steamboat, the classic story where they had a spiral notebook with every spot in the match months ahead of time written down in the notebook. Trying to think of, and that's kind of it. I mean, really, it depends on the guy, man. Usually, if you'll say to a guy, hey, you know, what are your moves? What do you do? And you tell me what you do, and I'll tell you what I can take. And sometimes I tell you what I'm willing to take and what I'm not willing to take. There was no, you were not going to suplex me off the top rope. That wasn't going to happen. Because I'm 6'5" and 375 pounds, and I can honestly say 375 now. I'm not lying, because I am down to 375. I had a guy that wanted to superplex me off the top rope one time, and I told him absolutely not. It was not going to happen.
That is ridiculous.
Because I don't have the confidence in you to be able to carry me over without dropping.
Right.
So you have that conversation a lot of times. This is what I do. This is what you do. This is what I'm willing to take. A lot of times with some guys, it's a negotiation.
Right.
Especially when two guys are not great friends and don't get along. You got two guys, you got dudes that have had 30 matches against each other. And that used to not be a lot, but now in the independent scene, if two guys have worked each other 30 times, that's like Steamboat Flair working each other 1,000. So they don't have to talk at all. And a lot of times they may not even, they'll just kind of figure a finish out on their own. We'll just do this or we'll do that, something they've done before. And they won't talk at all until they, you know, and they just call everything in the ring and they listen to people in the ring. And I heard George Steele, he talked about the time that he earned Andre the Giant's respect was in a match. And Andre told George Steele to body slam him. Now, George Steele said, if I went in and tried to body slam Andre, and they called this in the ring. They didn't talk about this. This was just Andre in the ring saying to George Steele, go ahead and slam me. Now, George Steele says he understood if I'd have went for the body slam, tried to pick him up, that he would have got up for me. He'd have gone up for the slam. I'd have slammed him, and that'd have been the end of it, and nobody would have talked about it. Nobody would have said anything. Andre wouldn't have thought anything about it or said anything about it, but George Steele made the decision to go up, go for the body slam, and then stop and act like he hurt his back.
Yeah.
And Andre said he gets it.
Yeah.
And they worked together, got along fine.
Yeah.
Said he, in comparison to that, he said basically what it all boiled down to why Andre didn't like Big John Studd was that before one of their matches, Andre said, there's one giant, that's me. You're not the giant. I'm the giant. I step over the top rope. You go between the top rope and the second rope. And they got to the ring. Andre stepped over the top rope, and so did Big John Studd, and that's all it took.
Mm.
Andre felt disrespected over a little moves like that. So when you get guys like that that don't necessarily like each other, it can be a bit of an issue. And I've seen guys, you know, they'll do every move that they're going to do in the dressing room. And I've seen other guys sit there and play cards until it's time to go put their gear on. So how you prepare a match really depends on the guy. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Hicks. While I'm on the subject of your question, you asked me about job guys. And my favorite job guys. And the truth is, I don't have a lot of favorite job guys. I think the best job guys are the guys whose names I don't know, who don't have any personality, who just got beat up. To me, those are the best. Now, that being said, there are guys that we all look back on fondly, the Italian Stallion, who I was a fan of, I guess as much as you can be. Obviously, the Mulkeys, who we talked to the Mulkeys, Heath and I did for like an hour one night, and we didn't record it or anything like that. We just, because we were in Charlotte and they were in Charlotte and they were sitting outside. I mean, we didn't go looking for them. We just happened to start talking. We're from the same area, so we knew like some of the same people. And we talked about everything but wrestling. George South is another guy. He's a really, really, really nice guy. That, you know, I've talked before about that great match you had with Ric Flair. Where Flair told him he got to be Steamboat. And I've actually talked to George about that, which is pretty cool. And been in a locker room with George, and he and I are not friends by any stretch of the imagination. I wouldn't you know, I don't put myself out there as being friends. But there's some guys that I am friends with, but ain't nobody, nobody you know. But I have talked to George 3 or 4 times and had a good conversation. Like when a lot of his, a lot of that stuff from the 605 show dropped on the network, you weren't even there. We were just in the back in the dressing room one time, and he and I were talking, and he was kind of telling me his opinion on. And I agree and disagree to an extent that, you know, Jesse Ventura got paid for his voice, and now they're using my likeness on the network and this and that and the other. But I tend to fall down on the side that you know, not just him, but like anybody, whatever their level of, whether it's Hulk Hogan or George South, being on that network gives them an exposure that they wouldn't normally get and that they wouldn't normally have. And it allows more people to know who they are. Because I've gone back and started watching these 605 shows and seeing people that I just completely forgot about, like Mike Jackson and Tony Zane. I tell you, man, one of the most famous, if you go back and watch the 605, probably not one of, probably the most famous job guy. If you go back and watch the 605 shows, do you know who I'm talking about? Mm-mm. No. Ray Traylor. When you go back and watch a lot of those 605 shows, you'll see this big dude in the ring, and it was obvious that he had some ability, but he had longer hair, and he wore just like trunks, and he was big. I mean, he's a big dude. If you don't know who Ray Traylor is, Dusty Rhodes took a liking to him, pulled him off TV for 6 months, brought him back, put a suit and a hat and a pair of sunglasses on him, and called him Big Bubba Rogers just because he liked him. And then he went on to be the Big Boss Man. And is, to me, as far as the big men that Hogan worked with, as far as match quality goes, now I'm not talking about drawing money with guys like Andre, but as far as the quality of the matches, I don't know that Hogan ever had a better match with a big man opponent than he did with a Big Boss Man. So he, you know, Ray Traylor was another job guy who went on to some success. You know, Edge, there's a lot of matches out there with Edge doing jobs. There's a match, if you go back and watch one of the Mick Foley DVDs, it's got a Jack Foley and a partner versus the British Bulldog. So Jack Foley, who wound up being Cactus Jack or Mankind, Mick Love, Dude Love, Mick Foley. He started out doing jobs for WWE. And then you got, you know, guys like Iron Mike Sharp. Johnny Rods is one that a lot of people forget about, who is a WWE Hall of Famer because, you know, he used to be one of their guys when somebody new would come into territory, they'd put him in the ring with Johnny Rods. And Johnny Rods was an enhancement guy, but he always got a little bit of offense, and he was he felt them out. He saw what kind of ability they had. And they also wanted to know, if you put him in the ring with Johnny Rods, is he going to protect him? Is he going to try? Because Johnny could handle himself. And Johnny went on to train the Dudleys and Taz and Tommy Dreamer. I think he trained all those guys. Yeah. And I might be wrong about that, but I know he definitely trained Taz. I'm pretty sure he trained Tommy Dreamer. Is it the Dudleys? Do you know for sure?
I'm pretty certain.
Yeah, I think it was all four of those guys in that area of the country. And then you had Barry Horowitz, who is one of the reasons Scott Hall went to WWF. Have you ever heard that story?
Mm-mm.
Most people haven't, but Scott Hall said when he was trying to make the decision about whether he wanted to go to WWF or sign a new contract with WCW, he happened to be somewhere, and he saw some of the WWF trading cards from the time, and Barry Horowitz had a WWF trading card. And he said, man, if, like, even their job guys get merch,
yeah,
why wouldn't I want to go work for that company? Because even Barry Horowitz, like, had the shirt with the hand on the back of it. So, I mean, and that's when you see guys like Ellsworth, I don't blame them. You know what I mean? They get to go to a company that sells a T-shirt with their face on the front. And you can't beat that. And you can't teach that. I'm sorry if I don't say the name of the people that asked me the questions. I apologize to you. I was asked what wrestlers I would like to see in different eras. I'd like to see Johnny Valentine today. I'm sorry, Johnny Valentine. I was kind of had an idea of a couple of guys. I'd like to see Johnny Valentine in 90s era All Japan.
Well, that's awesome.
That is when, if you go back and watch, you got Stan Hansen and Misawa and Kenta Kobashi, and I mean, just all these guys having these incredible hard-hitting matches, and they were working that real stiff, heavy style. And if you've never seen Johnny Valentine work, you're missing. I mean, there's not a whole lot of footage out there. Personally, myself, I own some footage, you know, that I bought from my good personal friend Jim Cornette. But I understand not everybody's gonna have access to the footage that I've got of Johnny Valentine. And what one reason that I got that footage was because it had a Johnny Valentine Wahoo McDaniel match. I remember talking to John Hitchcock, who wrote Front Row Section D, and having a good conversation about going and watching Wahoo, because he knew Wahoo, and just Wahoo's take on working with Valentine, that he had to hit him back as hard as he could, or he wasn't going to respect him. So for me to drop Johnny Valentine in 90s era All Japan, I would like to see the Great Muta today. I would like to see Big Van Vader today. I would love to see, imagine Big Van Vader allowed to be Big Van Vader. And what I mean, his athletic ability, for the things that he could do at, you know, 6 foot. I've met Vader, and he was taller than me. So I'm guessing he's about 6'6", 6'7", maybe. And it was probably close to 400 pounds back when he was having those great matches with, whether it be Sting or Cactus Jack or whatever. And to see a guy Big Van Vader size that could work like Big Van Vader, I mean, if I put him today, you wouldn't know who Braun Strowman is. You just wouldn't. I mean, Vader had a believability about him, and a natural ability and athleticism that most guys his size just, I mean, could only hope for. Most guys half his size weren't as athletic as he was in his prime. If you don't believe it, just go back and watch some of those matches. Those are a couple of guys that kind of come to mind. I think Ricky Steamboat would do well today. I'm trying to think. Some people were good for their time and their place. Like Harley Race was just great for his time and place. But I don't know how well a guy like Harley Race transfers to today. I mean, it's like Tom Selleck. I mean, there was a time, if you know, I remember a friend of mine's mom had a poster of Tom Selleck on the wall, because that's why Magnum T.A. became what he became, was because he kind of looked like Tom Selleck and that beefcake honcho. that honcho look with the mustache and the hairy chest. There was a time when that was big, and it's not anymore. And I don't know how well a guy like Harley Race would transfer to this time and this era. But I do know one thing. Heath Mulligan reads Honcho Magazine. I know that. So speaking of Vader, I got a couple of questions about heels and monster heels in comparison. So you had a guy like Vader, who was a great monster heel. And if you've never seen him, like from Vader's debut, like if you want a playbook of how to debut a monster, go back and watch Big Van Vader debut in New Japan Pro Wrestling against Antonio Inoki. For those that don't know, the Big Van Vader gimmick was originally intended to go to a man named Jim Hellwig, who was the Ultimate Warrior. That's not speculation or rumor. That's true. They had the gimmick of Big Van Vader before they had the guy to put in the mask and all the gear. And Hellwig decided not to do it. So it wound up going to Leon White, who had been Bull Power and the baby bull Leon White. And the way they debuted him was for him to have a match with Inoki. And basically he comes out and destroys Inoki. And Inoki was a legend. And nobody beat Inoki up. He comes out and destroys him in like a minute and a half. And they established him in that one night. And he comes here, they kept doing it that way. They'd bring him in. He had great matches with Sting. Just if you're looking for a good monster heel that could work, that could get in there with somebody smaller than him and not just beat him up, but beat him up in a very athletic way. To me, the polar opposite for a monster heel of Vader would be somebody like King Kong Bundy, who's a big guy, the Walking Condominium. A big dude. He was built like an egg.
Yeah.
But slow and methodical and nowhere near as athletic as somebody like Vader. Cool heel. You want to see a good cool heel. Because I had a question about monster heels and great old school pre-90s heels. So I'm kind of trying to incorporate both of them together. To me, the original cool heel, like before the NWO, before the Horsemen, you need to go back and watch Superstar Billy Graham. There's a DVD that WWE put out called Ahead of His Time, and it's the Superstar Billy Graham story. And you will see the most charismatic. I mean, it's hard to describe Superstar Billy Graham. He's like, if you don't know, Hulk Hogan basically aped his whole gimmick from Superstar Billy Graham, all the way down to the male pattern baldness. And the brother, that's Superstar Billy Graham. So if you want to, check that DVD out, if you can find it. You can probably go on YouTube and watch the whole documentary part there. It's probably on the network, too. I'm guessing the documentary part's on the network. So he's a good, cool heel. The Assassins were an incredible tag team. There's so many good Assassins promos. What is it? The Punch. Yeah, the Assassin has been feeding his, the only thing that's going to satisfy his fist is punching Dusty Rhodes. There's a promo where he fires one of the Assassins who had gotten beat by one of the Freebirds while he was gone. Just so diabolical and evil, the way he spoke, and he didn't always scream and holler and yell. I mean, he would get real quiet. You'd have to lean in to hear what he was saying. So they were in monster heels, but they were very diabolical. Just Ole Anderson. I'm trying to think of some other. I posted on the group the other day.
It is on.
Yeah, 20 years too soon. Okay, the Billy Graham story, 20 years too soon. It is on WWE Network. And it's well worth a watch, man. He had some really good matches with Dusty Rhodes. If they had wanted to turn him babyface, and they should have because the people were going crazy for him. They missed the boat turning him babyface, but they wanted to go with Bob Backlund, which makes no sense to me. How you would make, I mean, I have no disrespect to Bob Backlund, but how you choose Bob Backlund over Superstar Billy Graham, I will never know. Because Superstar is a man, as far as I'm concerned. I've got a copy of the DVD. I bought it when it came out. It's got the bull rope matches with Dusty Rhodes on it. It's great stuff, man. Old school pre-90 heels and monster heels. Obviously the Four Horsemen. But Ole Anderson, I posted in the group the other day, the big turn of 1980. where basically Ole had been lying to Dust, but been pretending to be a good guy so that Dusty would finally come and ask him to be his partner just so he could turn on him in the cage. If you want to see another good, I don't think it was a heel turn, so to speak, but pre-84, a lot of people don't understand Ric Flair was a tweener. for a long time after he won the title. He would feud with baby faces and he would feud with heels. And he had done some stuff with Buddy Landell. And then they got to the night in the cage and they pretty much recreated the big turn of 1980, where the Assassins and Ivan Koloff and Ole and Gene Anderson attacked Dusty. And except this time they had Dusty come down and save Flair. And then Arn and Tully came in the ring, or Arn and Ole came in the ring and broke Dusty's leg and set off a great couple of years of business in that company. So another good heel turn, we talked about this on the show before, is when Lex Luger had been brought in and was going to be a horseman, and then he wasn't a horseman, then he teamed up with Wyndham. J.J. Dillon's telling Barry Wyndham, you're going to need him, you're going to look over, he's not going to be there. And sure enough, he looks over him. Luger's not there. Barry Wyndham turns heel, tags in, or does what he does, and then Arn or Tully one covers Luger, and they win the title, and Barry Wyndham joins the Horsemen. That's a good one. Who else is a good heel, Heath?
You don't forget the question about Great Muta.
Okay, yeah, I won't.
Great heel, I mean.
Yeah, Great Muta, the whole JTEC, yeah, how can I forget Great Muta and Terry Funk, the JTEC Corporation?
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But that was when Ric Flair was babyface. Oh, that's good stuff right there.
That's what we're getting into.
Yeah, that's what we're kind of going to be getting into on the show.
Sorry, I'm returning messages.
No, that's fine. I'm glad you reminded me of that. But yeah, Muta, it was interesting, man. He, with Gary Hart, who to me, like, Gary Hart's probably my favorite manager. Everybody else has got, I know they list Cornette and Heenan, and I certainly love Bobby Heenan, but to me, there was nobody cooler than Gary Hart, especially as I've been going back and watching it, some of the stuff Gary Hart would say that nobody else would have had the guts to say, basically because according to Gary, he discovered Dusty. That's Gary's story. He discovered Dusty. I don't know. But I know he said some scathing things on some promos about Dusty Rhodes and his wife and his sister and his ugly sister and his fat wife and this and that and the other. I love Gary Hart. And the whole JTEC Corporation thing was awesome.
Gary Hart never, he was always cool, calm, and collected.
Yeah,
but there was something about his voice where you believed him, but it wasn't like he wasn't out there yelling, losing it. It was just this.
Right.
Japan number one, U.S. number two. I mean, that's one of the best.
And he was smart enough to know he was managing one man gang. And he called, this was in World Class. Have you seen this?
Uh-uh.
If you don't know Gary Hart's history, he had been allegedly in, like, running numbers and stuff like that in Chicago. When they brought One Man Gang in, he started calling One Man Gang Moon because that was One Man Gang's street gang name. They had been in the same street gang together. Well, Gary was losing his hair, and he knew he was going to have to shave his head, so One Man Gang's having a match. He puts it, I think, was it against Kerry Von Erich? Actually, it's been so long since I've seen it.
It's Kerry or Kevin. Was that Parade of Champions?
It was Parade of Champions. It was against one of
the, it's in the first magazine ever, buddy.
Yeah, it was in. It was at one of those against one of the Von Erichs. Well, anyway, instead of just cutting his hair and shaving his head like a lot of guys, you know, Triple H would have done, he actually put his hair up and said, if you can beat the One Man Gang, then I'll shave my head. And lost him, shaved his head. Rather than just doing it for no reason and showing up bald one day, he used it to make a little money. Also carried a big long razor blade with him that he'd carve you up with if you messed with it.
Allegedly.
No, he's pretty open about it. But what I liked about, another thing I like about Gary Hart is he would talk about the spoiler, Don Jardine, another great big man, and heavily influenced The Undertaker, if you've never watched any of Don Jardine's stuff. But when Gary Hart speaks about Don Jardine, he calls him Donald.
Mm.
Me and Donald. Donald and I were doing this, and Donald and I. But when he speaks about Ric Flair, he calls him Ricky Flair. Me and Ricky Flair. Jimmy Cornette. It's always, so if you got it, if your name's been shortened, he says it long. If your name, if your name's long, he shortens it. I don't know what he'd call me, but I'm going to call myself out of here. I feel like I tried my best. This was first run. You know, Heath, I have a newfound respect for you. It's not as easy to do a show by yourself as you think it is. Huh? You know, you agree? It's not as easy to get on here and not have you to play off of. It's really not. And I don't even... Now he's just, you're being obtuse.
I don't know what that means.
I think it means fat. But anyway, I appreciate you listening. Bear with me while I figure out how to do this. By the way, you'll notice in the description it says Kerry's Corner. That is in tribute to our friend growing up, Kerry Trainum, who's no longer with us. He's no longer with us in Pendleton. We grew up with Kerry. Heath and I both spent time at Kerry's house. We watched wrestling with Kerry. And when we first started the Double Dropkick Show, we had four listeners. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Kerry. And he didn't to the best of my knowledge, I know he watched a little wrestling growing up.
Right.
But he's never been the super fan like Heath and I and even Brad Finley and some of those guys.
Yeah.
But he listens to the show because he likes to hear us and he likes to whatever. So he listened. And an episode in, I guess he had asked a question about something.
And yeah, he asked some really good questions.
Yeah, it was a good question. And we jokingly called it Kerry's Corner that day. So in tribute to him... And Heath is going to let him know, hopefully, that now we're doing a patrons-only show called Kerry's Corner. So that's why it will be called Kerry's Corner from now on, just in tribute to him. And that's it. Y'all take it easy. Bye.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.